time and your interest and the work you do. So this morning I'm going to divide our time together into three sections, and I'm going to leave time for questions and answers between each. The three sections that I'll be working on, first I'd like to give you a little background on the R rule, and then give you some information on future pictures and strategies that you can use as you develop them, and follow up with information on personal planners. It'll be brief, but you'll see how they're used to support the work that's done in R rules class and support future pictures. It's my hope that when we close today, you'll have some strategies and insights that you'll want and can take back and use right away in your schools or programs or agencies. So I'd like to start with a little background on the R rules. I first heard Ruby Payne in 2002, and at the time I was managing comprehensive school reform and Gear Up grants. I was also doing a lot of work with kids at school and through community programs. Programs like Great Court, Youth Conservation, Student Leadership. Shortly after meeting Ruby and learning more about her work, I became a certified trainer for my district in both frameworks and bridges and began training staff and teachers. I also started presenting and using the work with teens. The title of the book, The R Rules, developed out of that work with teens. We'd always quoted a statement from Grant East with our Gear Up kids. The quote was, "Rules without relationship breed rebellion." And we always talked about the importance of relationships, both interpersonal and to the goals and expectations we had as a group and as individuals. We also translated that little quote into a mental model or a formula, and it would look like R minus R equals R. Rules minus relationship equal rebellion. And then we'd add other R's and just kind of play with, you know, like refusal, resentment. And before long, the kids started referencing it and calling the concept the R rules. We also started using James Comer's quote, "No significant learning occurs without a significant relationship." And we added the words Ruby taught us of mutual respect, making it read, "No significant learning occurs without a significant relationship of mutual respect." Now, respect was another big word in our program, and it started with an R. So out of that came the R rules. And we use a formula with six R's to represent the statement and the premise that the R rules are based on. When you teach individuals the rules and rigor in relationships of mutual respect, and in relationship to what they want to do, be, and have, they will develop the resources needed to get the desired results in respect. So that's the premise that we operate on. If we teach the rules and the rigor, we'll get the results we want. We'll also have respect. We integrated and used the work in several classes and pilots, and we kept developing it as a life skills class. One of the students in one of our pilots said, "You know, this is like the real life skills class." And in 2008, the R Rules as a student workbook and facilitator guide was published. The facilitator guide comes with a DVD of resources, and that includes a PowerPoint presentation for each of the 12 chapters. If you're using this material, you've noticed that most of the pages in the workbook have several activities on each page. The PowerPoint slides were included and are created to be used in order to separate and present those activities and focus on particular topics and concepts. The R Rules was designed for use with teens in the eighth grade and beyond, and it draws on and includes principles and concepts from Bridges Out of Poverty and a framework for understanding poverty. Each chapter begins by presenting information using a pattern of what, why, and how. And as participants explore and sort and use information to develop their future pictures and expand resources, they use this pattern of what, why, and how to ask these three questions. What is this information? Why is it important to me? Well, is it important to me? And how can I use it? The pattern provides a mediation and is helpful, particularly when learners are new to the skill or the information. And asking what, why, and how also teaches a pattern that then can be used in multiple settings and situations to sort what's important from what's not, to help see connections, different options, problem solve, make decisions and choices. The R Rules is currently being used in several schools and communities, and it can be delivered as a curriculum aligned to state standards, integrated into consumer ed, financial literacy, life skills, economics, sociology. We're using it as lessons for advisory classes and programs, are using it, programs like Big Brothers and Big Sisters. One community is using R Rules with teens during the same time that the teens' parents complete classes in getting ahead. Currently in my school district, we're developing the R Rules as a social skills curriculum for special education classes. The introduction can be used as a one-day workshop to provide an overview or kick off a program. And the R Rules is a framework, and it's designed for flexible delivery. The chapters don't have to be used in sequence, but every chapter presents information that's interrelated and builds and expands on knowledge and resources as the students work through the book. So that's a little history of the R Rules. I think right now I'd like to just open this up for questions for just a few minutes. If anybody has any questions, I'd be glad to field those now.
At this point, Betty, I don't have any questions coming through.
Okay. One of the questions that I'm often asked is, well, what training do I need? And Stephanie, you sort of addressed that. The R Rules was really designed so that people certainly who were familiar with framework and bridges and trained as trainers in this work could use it and pick up the activities and go with it. There's also a facilitator training. We've done about 3 days here with our facilitators with a follow-up visit. So that's one question that I've had asked. So I'll move on to future pictures now. And if you do have questions, please share them because I'm real interested in learning from you. I often get requests on strategies for activities to use with kids. And I thought it'd be really, I was surprised at some of the questions that I got about how to get kids to draw future pictures. So I'm going to start by having you do some quick activities, I hope you won't mind, that you can use to build information and future pictures and take back. And I'm going to frame them like I would with the kids, so bear with me. So first of all, what's a future picture? Well, let's come up with a working definition. How do you define a future picture? Would you please take 30 seconds and just jot down two or three words or phrases that you use to define the term future picture. I may be a little off 30 seconds because I'm having trouble with my clock. I'm going to apologize for my clock issue here and move on. I want to share some high school kids' responses to this same question. They define a future picture as personal future, graduation, college, career, family, this weekend, state of the world, and anything after right now. Another one said, thinking of the future and what you'll be doing years from now. I wonder if they're similar to your answers. And so as you think of that and as you do this activity, it's fun to compare. Here's what the staff answers were. They defined a future picture as my goal, my plan, what I want or think my future will look like, my work, my purpose, a dream, a vision, what you're always dreaming of doing. Now, basically, because when I work with kids, the concept of past, present, future, I'm really trying to establish that. I just consider anything that's not current as a future picture, and we use that. On page 151 in the R Rules book, future picture is defined as the vision or mental model of what the future will look like or is hoped to look like. A picture or a goal. A picture of a goal or future outcome that can and is used as a mental model for sorting and planning. And when I talk about future pictures, I'm not just talking about individual future pictures. You know, at the first of the year when you set up a classroom or you start developing a program and you review all the rules and the procedures and the policies, you're really creating a future picture of what you want to have and hope will occur. So moving on after this, using this definition that it's what we hope will occur and it's what we want, for this second activity, I'm going to ask you to think of and visualize what your personal future picture would look like. I want you to get a mental model in your mind. And now I'm going to ask you to take 1 minute and sketch it.
Betty, that's 1 minute.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Oh, my goodness. Hardest thing to wait. Okay. So, you have your sketch. And I'm just wondering, I'd love to see your sketches. Did any of you draw a vacation or retirement picture? And was it easy for you to come up with a visual or to draw that image? I find that sometimes kids draw question marks, or they'll leave it blank. And what I've come to realize that it isn't because they don't want to sketch or complete the activity, but they often are just unable to see or imagine any kind of a future picture. I'm also seeing it with adults lately, but anyway. I'm going to give you some strategies for that later. But if a student says that they really don't know, I always try to encourage them and tell them that I had a hard time with that too. I could never figure it out. And that's why we're using the R rules. And by the end of this class, we'll have some new ideas, and they'll be sketching pictures. So sketching is a strategy that works well. Those of you who are familiar with the pain model, you probably use it all the time. It works really well when words and language are limited. And it also works as a quick assessment that can provide information that might not otherwise be shared. When we began sketching and using this strategy at the alternative school, many of the student feature pictures included a baby or a young child, because being a mom or a dad and acting as the adult in the home is an identity and it's a role. And so I've really come to look at those future pictures closely and try to gather information. The next activity I'm going to have you do, and I really like using this with kids, is called the 444 activity. And it's a way to break down an abstract concept like a future picture or a goal or just anything into parts to generate a plan. So I'd ask each of you on a piece of paper to write the number 4 3 times. And write it on separate lines, please, because I'm going to have you right behind it. And Stephanie, I hope you have the clock.
I do.
Okay, thank you. Okay, now I'm going to ask you to take 30 seconds and write by the first number 4. What you need to have done, or what you want to have done in 4 hours, 30 seconds.
That's 30.
For some of you, it's going to take a lot longer than 30 seconds, isn't it? Okay. Take 30 seconds to write down next to the next four what you need to have done or want to have done in the next 4 days.
And that's 30.
And next to the last four, write down what you need or want to have done in the next 4 weeks.
And that's 30.
Okay. Let me ask you, could you use this activity with your kids? Could you use it to get information? Or could you use it and have it written out and then use it later to help them set a goal or develop action steps to make that list a reality? You can change the numbers or the time increments to 2 minutes, 2 days, 2 years. Sometimes in classes I'll say, what do you need to do in the next 2 minutes, because it's an impulsivity issue. And you may want to, you want to include some information that will help make connections, such as, in 4 hours school will be out. What do you need to have done by then? Or in 4 days your projects are due. What do you need to have done by then? Now, for some individuals, 4 hours is a future picture. And one of the patterns that I see, one thing that we had a big aha about here was that we were really, really talking all the time about getting our kids ready for college, man, focusing on that college readiness. And sometimes we overlooked creating a real tight future picture to get through the eighth grade. So it's okay to make short-term and long-term future pictures. You might also use it on Monday to help organize the work for the week. So I'm going to ask you just to take a few minutes and just jot down any notes or anything that you want to note about this and any way that you might want to use it with your kids. Now, let me share a strategy. As I was given the directions, I talked out each step. Next, first. And I also gave a time for each task. Sometimes kids just find this very, very annoying. But I did it for a couple of reasons. If you have perfectionists or procrastinators, particularly with sketching, it's really helpful to set a start and a stop time. And you learn a lot about people when you ask them to sketch something. You learn a lot about your kids. Some of them will work for a long, long time on that picture. And also, this strategy helps develop an awareness of the time and time needed to complete a task. Time is such an abstract concept, and the R Rules is full of activities designed to teach and build skills around four generic mental models that greatly impact future pictures at school and work. And those four are time, space, part to whole, and formal register. I'm going to give you an example of time and part to whole. Many of the kids I work with use a cell phone or a digital display on their clock to tell time. I had one kid ask me, he said, why would anybody wear a watch? It only tells you one thing. But anyway, it only displays a number. And I was getting ready for work the other day, and the clock in my room displays numbers. It said 7:49, and I just quickly in my head thought, quarter till, got a quarter till. I have to be at work at 8, 7:49, I'm okay. I still have plenty of time. Well, the perception changed when I walked into the other room and there was a clock there with hands and it showed all the hours. I realized I only had 11 minutes to get to work. So really working on presenting time and time to task and getting kids to manage their time is something that we really work on. one of the reasons future pictures are so important is that they help establish an identity and a role. When I first heard Ruby, she cited research from a 1996 or 97 study on preventing teen pregnancy. Planned Parenthood had started asking girls in the fourth grade what they wanted to do or be when they grew up. And then they followed with those girls until they were 16. And now the girls who said in the fourth grade, I don't know what I want to do or be, by the time they were 16, 85% of them were pregnant. The state of Oregon has done research on this too and found that the most effective prevention programs for teen pregnancy were when they gave role identity. And it's not just with girls, it's with guys. So we used a technique and we started asking all the kids in our programs this question. What do you want to do, be, or have when you get out of school or when you get older? At the alternative school where we piloted the R rules, now we had a setup where every semester, the way it was blocked out, equaled a full year. So we had our kids for a good length of time. But at the R rules where we piloted at the alternative school where we piloted the R rules, we had an unexpected outcome. And while there are a lot of variables, I understand that, this is noteworthy. At the end of the first semester of instruction, using the R rules in our life skills course, all the girls in the class were pregnant with the exception of one. Now, at the end of the fourth semester, using the R rules and really working on our culture and asking the same questions, only one girl was pregnant. And the future picture that our kids were drawing was very, very different. So when we met with the one girl who was pregnant, we always do exit interviews with our kids. She assured us, in fact, I would quote her, she said, you know, I have resources and I'm really able to handle this situation. So we always ask, what do you want to do, what do you want to be, and what do you want to have? So I would ask you just to please jot that down. Go to your bucket list. What do you want to do? What do you want to be? And what do you want to have? Just take a bit of time and just jot down one or two things. And if you don't want to jot it down, you can just draw like a little red convertible or whatever just makes you happy. We've used this technique at elementary, middle school, and high school. And we always ask kids to sketch a response and keep it in their personal planner. Sometimes it's easier to draw what you want to have than it is to draw what you want to be. And so... If you know what you want to have, then you can, if a student knows what they want to have, you can develop a plan because you have to do and be something generally to get to that have. So the picture serves as a mental model and we use it to sort and guide choices, see relationships between current and future pictures. I see it as a concrete representation of hope. So when a student has a teacher, here's another way you can use this picture. When a student has a teacher or a class that they don't particularly like, if they can focus on what they want to do, be, or have, if they can use this future picture, it can be a motivation or a strategy to control impulsivity and get through the class. And I'm going to talk to you about additional strategies. You can also find additional strategies in the chapters on response and register in the R Rules book. If your kids aren't big on sketching or creating an individual picture, you may want to have them work in teams and have the team draw a future picture. Or they can draw a picture for their group or for the class and then follow later with individuals. There's a great deal of information in the R Rules book in the chapter titled Roadwork on how to begin to create those. We have classes that have created dream walls with images from the internet, and they include pictures of careers, things that kids want to own, or pictures showing heroes and talking about the roles and the things they'd like to do. We have one class that has a wall full of pictures who thought and made a difference, full of pictures of people who um, the kids admired, and they all brought in all these pictures. Now, if you do this with your class, I'm going to recommend that by the end of the class, you have the pictures of your students up there on that wall, because they should be learning to think different, too. This is a topic that's covered in the chapter titled Review, and it just goes back to roles and identities. Future pictures change. Benny Barnes was a great ball player until he lost his leg rescuing a child who was caught in the railroad track. He had to reframe his future picture, and he did it by becoming a great coach. Many of your kids will have to reframe your future pictures many times based on events and things that they maybe don't have control over or that they do. There are two teachers that I work with to give their kids a picture frame at the start of the year, and the kids create a collage of what they want to do, be, or have. And when things change, they just come in and take down their picture and literally reframe their picture. And in the chapter on reframing, there's a lot of additional information on this. When we started, we asked kids at the elementary school to keep sketches of what they wanted to do, be, or have, and they kept them in a, their personal planners were vinyl binders that had a three-ring binders that had a vinyl sleeve on the front. And they kept their future pictures in the front of those, on the front of those binders. And one little girl in the second grade drew a pole dancer for what she wanted to be or have. Now, she's a pretty good artist, and this generated some conversation between the principal and the teacher. As it worked out, the little girl had a relationship with someone who was a pole dancer. And as the kids kept working and talking about different careers and options, she redrew her future picture. So if somebody draws a future picture that you question, you want to really remember and think about those relationships. One more thing that I want to point out, particularly with older kids, I'll often say to older kids when I'm having sketch what they want to do, be or have, or a future picture. I'll say, you know, if you don't want anybody to see this, go ahead and cover it up, and I will let them keep it someplace where nobody else can see it. I do work with them in conference one-on-one, or their teachers work with them in conference with them one-on-one, and at that time we discuss them and set goals off of them. One last pattern I want to share with you around future pictures. Almost always when I ask for the first time, what do you want to do, be, or have, the responses I get are either at one end of the continuum or the other, and there doesn't seem to be much in between. Responses on one end look like, I want to be a rap star, I want to be an athlete, I want to own my own business, NASCAR driver, I want to be a doctor, I want to have a lot of money, nice house, nice car, nice family. And at the other end of this spectrum, what I get is, I don't know, or doesn't matter, I'll be dead. Both sets are pretty abstract, and often kids don't understand the steps or rigor or hidden rules involved in reaching their goal. We had a young man that got a job at the local parts store, and he really did well, but he quit after 6 weeks. When we asked him why quit? He said, well, you know, I found out that you had to be there a year before they made you the manager. We had another boy who wanted to be a veterinarian. When we talked to him about his classes and his coursework, he had 10 credits. He was a senior. So a strategy that you can use with someone who is unable to find an answer to this question, to what you want to do, be, or have, is to ask them what they don't want to do, or what they don't want to be, what they don't want to have. And then you can use a planning backwards and work from there. Our rules is based on strengths. You build on strengths. It's an asset-based model. And so you always use whatever they have to develop that plan and picture and move forward. If I get the other answer, I'll be dead. Well, I used to just humor them and say, well, you know, I thought that too. I thought the same thing, and look at me. So you better make plan A and you better have plan B, because, you know, plan A isn't going to work. So you need both. In actuality, if that's their real future picture, then that's very enlightening for us, and we need to really work with them to reframe that picture, to offer options and resources that can change that picture. Each chapter in the R Rules covers a topic and concepts that are vital for success at school, work, and in order to live well. They're all interrelated and build on each other. They also can be easily adapted to different grades and developmental levels. Financial activities at ninth grade might look like a checkbook and a bank account. And at 10th grade, how to buy a car. 11th grade, FAFSA, how to fill out information for colleges, scholarships, careers, cost of living. At 12th grade, you might talk about stock market, insurance, renting or buying a home. Developing a future picture and a plan are only one part of this process. And as the kids work through the activities and chapters in the R rules, they're investigating and exploring and developing their skills and their confidence. They're using their problem-solving skills and decision-making and getting feedback and learning to work as a team and learning that all the hidden rules that exist really impact them as they work across different environments and with different people. I'd like to stop here and give you a minute after this to just jot down any notes, and I'd also like to ask you if you have any questions.
Betty, we did have a question come through.
Okay.
And I'll just remind everyone that if you've got a question and you can't remember what that email address is, it's questions, with an S on the end, questions@ahaprocess.com. And the question that came through is it permissible to make copies of pages in the workbook for use in groups?
I guess I would. I'm wondering why. If you have the PowerPoint, you can generate copies off of that. And generally, I ask that the kids have their own copy of the workbook. Is that helpful? I wonder if that answers the question.
Well, if not, the person can email us again and get a clarifying. We can clarify a little bit.
And certainly if they're using tools, you know, if you're putting off the tools out of the PowerPoint, yes.
Okay.
Okay, and if that didn't clarify, please let me know. I'm going to move now to personal planners, and this is not going to be real long. I just want to give you an idea of how we tie them all together. So as classes progress through the R rules, each student develops an individual personal planner, and what they tend to look like is either a three-ring notebook, a binder, a three-ring folder with some prongs, anything that they can organize and keep information. The planners are used to self-assess, and I recommend that you update them weekly in order to monitor progress, celebrate, make revisions. If you have a student who is not doing well in class, they have a lot of zeros, this is a time when they can look at that, think about what they need to do. You can get some interventions and help them develop resources right then. They also use those personal planners during conferences with staff. I recommend one-on-one just to talk about and review. And also with their parents. They present what they're doing. And it's really powerful to see a child grab their planner and explain their plan to their parents and show them a resource inventory and just work through what they want to do. I have one girl that went home, and all of her family now has a personal planner, and they use them. I do recommend, particularly with the younger kids, that you start with a three-ring binder. What I find is that that allows some concrete development and some skills, some organization, and they can add and take away. I also recommend that as this develops, you create an electronic personal planner for them, something that they can access. We had a student who filled out college applications, and they sent them two or three times, but they lost them. If we'd have had them in electronic form and stored, the student could have just gone back and gotten them. Also, if they leave your school, then they can access those, and they have them. We're also using jump drives in some of our schools for our kids. A standard personal planner is divided into five or six sections, and you can determine, you can make it work however you want to work. The key is using them, making them meaningful and relevant to whatever you are doing. If they just sit somewhere, they're not valuable at all. So here are the sections I use. Personal, financial, school, career, leadership, and resources. And in the personal section of a personal planner, you might find a calendar with birthdays and important dates that are highlighted. You'd find a student's personal picture, future pictures. One school in Wisconsin found that this was the most developed section of their planners because kids put in pictures. They put in their award certificates. They shared information. And the teachers gave them conversation time at the start of the day to organize and develop those planners. It really was about relationships, and they found that they had a really good teamwork in that classroom. In the school section, you'll find anything that has to do with reaching that future picture related to school. Transcripts are especially important. One of the things I found at high school was that when we started, often kids don't see their transcripts until they're maybe juniors or seniors. We started giving them blank transcripts in the ninth grade, and what we do is have them fill them out and complete them as they get credits. It seems to be a lot more positive, and then we develop four-year plans and programs of studies off of those. Also, all of our kids take college tours, and so the information from the college tours was kept in there. For careers, the Our Rules is really designed to bring in community. Our kids keep the notes from guest speakers. They all do a job interview, and people from our community come in and help them with those interviews. They get feedback. They may do two or three interviews. They may keep technical vocabulary in there, their career interests and inventories. In the leadership section, include anything that has to do with cultures or heritage, citizenship, and leadership. Heritage and race is a lifelong resource that doesn't change, and it supports role identity. In leadership section, we might keep evidence of volunteering, service learning, clubs, teams. In the resource section, we keep vocabulary notebooks, step sheets, mental models, forms for using tools, like forms and tools like planning backwards, maybe the registers of language, anything that a student would want to go back and refer to. So for personal planners, a notebook, something concrete, electronic. If you're going to keep anything confidential in them, please consider that. One of the schools that I work with offers their students a file, particularly kids who are homeless. They'll offer a file in a locked cabinet where they can keep information that they might keep in that personal planner because they don't want anything to be lost or somebody else use it. So personal planners, the whole point of a personal planner is that as the kids work through the R rules and that they develop any kind of information that from the R rules, that they can put those in those personal planners and use them. Personal planners are tools and resources that are full of artifacts and accomplishments that occur during this learning process, and they support the journey of these students as they work to reach the future picture that they've drawn for themselves. So at this time, I'd be glad to take any other questions or...
We do have another question.
Okay.
And we've got a participant who's asking how much time you allot to teach each chapter.
And that depends on how we're delivering it. There is a pacing guide in the back of the book. I try to run three-week units, and it really depends on how deep I'm going with each concept. It really depends on the model. I'm sorry, that sounds kind of evasive. There is a pacing guide in the back, and when we run it as a year-long class or a semester class, we run three-week units. So each one is a little different based on the needs of our students and how it goes. Sometimes you start with something and kids are really aware of the concepts and what you're trying to teach. Other times it just takes you longer. Or if it's something that students really need, we'll take longer with it.
And again, for the person who emailed that in, if you need any more clarifying on that, please feel free to email us again, and that email address is questions@ahaprocess.com.
If there are no further questions, it's my hope that today you got some new information that you'll be able to use and take back, and I really appreciate you being here and your interest. I'd like to thank you for your time.
Let's see. I don't have any further questions at this point. If someone all of a sudden thinks of something, Betty, are you okay if they email us at questions.com and then I can forward that to you?
That would be great. And okay. Any ahas or insights, we'd appreciate you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, everyone, for participating. Thank you so much, Betty, for taking your time and for everyone else for joining us for this time. And I found it very interesting, and I'm so glad that we were able to do this. And again, if anyone has any questions, please do email us. If anyone would like to get a hold of Betty, you can always call the office or email us, and we will connect you. So thank you so much.